Blog Talk Radio.
News Network Extra with Brooke Hines. I'm Brooke Hines. I'm your host, and it's Wednesday, January 15th, the day after the seventh Democratic presidential debate, and it was the last one before the Iowa caucuses, and what a debate it was. Lots have been said about this today. A lot was said last night. Here's my thing. The debate was awful television. It was even worse journalism. It was just awful all the way around. The only new thing that we came away with was that CNN is even more craven than we had ever imagined. And actually, that's kind of a story because we already knew that CNN was pretty much as craven as we could have imagined. So our minds were blown. We went into a galaxy brain with how bad it got last night. I want to talk about a lot of stuff tonight. We have some time. We also, I've invited people to call in. Let me give that number out just in case you might not have it. The call-in number is 909-265-9104. I'm going to chat for a little while and take some calls if they come in, as they come in. I really want to hear what other people have to say. I know how it felt here at Swampy J Studios with myself and Mrs. Brooke, or Mr. Brooke, my husband. We were shocked. We were shocked from the word go. I mean, you know, to be fair, the first 5 to 7 minutes seemed like a regular kind of debate where people were actually going to talk about some relevant things, and the framing was going to be rather unbiased and rather journalistic. And then it just went completely downhill from there. It was insane. And I'm not the only one who thinks that. As a matter of fact, I stayed off of, and I don't usually do this, I stayed off of Twitter last night, mostly during the debate. We had it on in the television in the living room, and I also had it on mobile devices so that I could catch some clips from time to time. But I got to tell you, there wasn't much that I wanted to catch because, you know, everything other than to catch clips because things were going so awful and they were remarkably awful, there wasn't much reason to follow things. So first commercial break. You know, I went into my DM groups pretty much to be like, what the hell was that? Are you guys seeing this? And it seems like a lot of people were seeing the same debate that I was seeing. There's been some great stories out today. Zach Carter in the Huffington Post, I think he has one of my favorite debate wrap-ups with a piece entitled CNN Completely Botched the Democratic Presidential Debate. The anchor substituted centrist talking points for substantive questions. There is no question about that. That's exactly what happened. I love the lead to this story, by the way. Zach Carter leads off by saying, who will stand up for the insurance town in the 2020 election? Why should government do things? Will Bernie Sanders bankrupt America? Who on stage will let Iran have a nuclear weapon? You know, just because. And he says, if these sound like terrible questions to you, you're right. They were awful. And they were the focus of CNN's tedious, interminable, frivolous debate on Tuesday night, a fiasco of irrelevance held 3 weeks before the Iowa caucuses. Now, you know, it's not just 3 weeks before the Iowa caucuses. Some other things have been happening in the background too. The big Des Moines Register poll came out the other day. So this CNN debate happens on the heels of this Des Moines Register poll, which is one of these polls that people give a lot of weight to. So the people who win these polls generally go on to win the caucus and generally go on to do very well in the primary. And Bernie Sanders is now in the lead with 20% support in this poll, and that's an increase of 5 points since the last time they polled. Warren is behind 3 points behind Bernie Sanders with 17%. Pete Buttigieg dropped 9 points in this poll, and Joe Biden is holding steady at 15. The Klobuchar, she's down there at 6%. I don't even know why she's still in these debates. I don't know why she's still on the stage. I don't know why Steyer is on the stage. I don't understand a lot of what happens in the world generally, but somebody wants to make Amy Klobuchar happen, and they want to make her happen like really, really bad. Can I just take a moment to say something? This is my message to Amy Klobuchar. Amy Klobuchar, if you're listening, if you go on YouTube and you put in the search bar eyebrow makeup techniques, just a little update, just check it out, just see what people are doing now. And try to avoid using your children's Crayolas on your forehead in the coming weeks. That was horrific. I couldn't take my eyes off of them. Amy needs some help. But we're going to talk about Amy a little bit more in a second. As I was preparing for this show, I was blown away at the coverage. Now, I was collecting stories, I was, you know, looking at everything that has been talked about, and I don't think, and this is the seventh time I've done this, right? You know, so we've had seven debates, you know, we've been here, we've done this. I was amazed at story after story of how terrible CNN was doing with the questions and with the framing and with the debate and just what a fiasco it was generally. So Zach Carter is not out there all by himself. Ryan Grimm, Ada Chavez, and Akala Lacey from The Intercept also did a piece at the Iowa debate. Bernie Sanders's most vociferous opponent was CNN. And this is three people writing a rather short story, but I thought one of the interesting things in here was it had to do with and I don't know if I want to talk about this yet, but the CNN moderator, Abby Phillip, opened a line of questioning on the recent feud between Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. And now we're going to talk a lot about this because this is, you know, I think that this is what was set up for this debate to actually feature. I think looking back, this whole Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders feud, in my mind, is a ploy by party elites to take substantive debate off of the table and replace that instead with this kind of, you know, really lowbrow substance-free identity politics. You know, they want to be able to paint Bernie Sanders as anti-feminist somehow. You know, this is a guy who was standing up for women's rights way before a lot of women were. I mean, this, he's unassailable on this. I mean, one of the things that you do when you really want to be effective in kneecapping somebody is you want to tell a story that's believable. You want to tell a story that actually aligns with preconceived notions that people already have of a person. So if you were going to, you know, like, let's say you wanted to go after, let's take somebody easy, you know, take John McCain. You know, if you had wanted to go after John McCain, then you would, a likely way to go after him would be to say, you know, he's never met a war that he didn't love, and that he is likely to, you know, spark off tensions in a place where tensions didn't exist before. That's believable because John McCain was, you know, somebody who never met a war he didn't like. Bernie Sanders, on the other hand, trying to paint him as anti-woman and anti-feminist is almost as absurd as trying to paint him as, you know, a 20-something, you know, festival going, you know, Coachella, like you know, person who partakes of ecstasy or something. He's just, it just doesn't fit, you know, and that makes people in our mind as we're rolling it over, since it doesn't fit and it doesn't click in, it makes you turn back on the question. It makes you turn back on the questioner, and it especially makes you turn back on Elizabeth Warren and ask yourself, why are you doing this? You know, what's going on here? You know, as long as I brought it up, I'm gonna go out of order. The whole thing with the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren feud, as it's being sold through the media, it started happening a few days before this debate. And it kind of came out in dribs and drabs. And that should have been our little heads up. That should have told us that something was getting ready to come down the pipe. Now, the first thing we saw, I believe this was on Sunday, the first thing we saw was this really odd story by Alex Thompson at Politico that, and I covered this on Sunday on PNN, that that there was a script that Bernie Sanders volunteers, not campaign workers, but volunteers, that Bernie Sanders volunteers were using, that if people said that they were leaning towards Elizabeth Warren, the script supposedly said to say, well, Warren supporters are highly educated, more affluent, and they're going to show up to the Democratic, to vote Democratic no matter what. So she's bringing no new bases to the Democratic Party. So big whoop, right? I mean, like, that's actually true. That's not like saying, Elizabeth Warren is a tyrant who would, you know, get us into another war, or, you know, something that is just outrageous and untrue. This is actually a mundane fact that is 100% true. Now, what is weird about this, though, and we covered this on Sunday and a lot has been said about it, is that this particular script showed up on a Slack channel for volunteers, not for campaign workers, not for staff, but it showed up on a volunteer channel by somebody who had posted once and they weren't known by the people in the Slack. It was an unapproved script, so it was taken down. Of course, Alex Thompson, the reporter at Politico, just dug in. You know, as much as people were providing additional information and pushing back on this story, instead of taking that into consideration and reaching out to get more information, he dug in and dug in further and pushed back harder, which to me is a, you know, those are all kinds of red flags. A political reporter should actually find the story as it comes rather than trying to manufacture the story that you think you want to tell. And in this case, it really seemed like this reporter, Alex Thompson of Politico, had a story that he really wanted to tell. So I started wondering, you know, back then, like, you know, like what else is coming? And it wasn't too much longer after that, that this narrative about that leaked out that Elizabeth Warren sent over to CNN. It wasn't too long until this started showing up. And, you know, first of all, this is going to be anything where a campaign is pushing out a narrative and a news organization just takes it at face value is highly suspect. And what's going on here with Elizabeth Warren and CNN and this whole story about, oh, when Elizabeth Warren met with Bernie Sanders said that a woman, supposedly, according to Elizabeth Warren, that Bernie Sanders said that a woman can't win the presidential election. And that's not what he said. He refutes that. Very few people would believe that he said that anyway. Again, they're trying to, you know, create a story out of whole cloth that isn't something that most people, you know, have a toehold in. There's nothing to indicate that Bernie Sanders is that kind of person. Again, he is on video for the last 30 years saying that, you know, more women need to run. I think a woman could run, you know, can win the presidency. He campaigned tirelessly for Hillary Clinton. She won the popular vote by 4 million votes. I mean, just on and on and on and on. None of this makes any sense. And you could see on stage, too, that when Elizabeth Warren was given the opportunity to speak to this, CNN, instead of turning to Elizabeth Warren and saying, well, is this true? After Bernie Sanders said it's not, instead of turning to her and saying, is this true? They said, well, how did it make you feel when Bernie Sanders said this to you? And you could see on Bernie's face, you could see this look coming across his face like, oh, here it comes. And he actually laughed, and the audience laughed as well. It was one of those nervous laughs like, oh, we're in the midst of people just completely mind-fucking everybody. What the hell? And then through that, Elizabeth Warren says, well, it made me feel like, and I didn't see it coming. And then you can see this look wash over Bernie Sanders' face like he was recognizing that she had totally turned to the dark side, that she was totally lying, that she was, you know, completely, you know, making stuff up out of nowhere. And I've had that feeling myself. I know the interiority of that. I know what that feels like from inside. And I think we all do. We all know what that feels like from inside when somebody is right to your face, right in front of everybody, just, you know, pushing a great big lie. Yeah, it feels like the rug is pulled out from under you. And at the same time, you know, in that moment, that you can never trust them again. You know in that moment that they aren't who they said they were all this time. All this time that you thought you knew this person, they weren't who they said they were. Now, this shouldn't be any surprise about Elizabeth Warren, because she has said a lot of things that she turned out not to be. You know, like the first woman of color working at the Harvard Law School, that she was, she's Cherokee, just on and on. Elizabeth Warren has had quite a problem with getting her facts straight about herself. And to that point, Current Affairs, Nathan J. Robinson at Current Affairs, I love this guy. He's got a great story called The Credibility Gap that examines certain issues that Elizabeth Warren has had with hewing to the truth and keeping straight with regard to the truth. And he lists out a few of the problems that she's had. She said she opposed fancy wine fundraisers, even though she held one herself. She now denounces as corrupting, raising money through PACs, and falsely claimed that her campaign was 100% grassroots funded when it carried over millions from a Senate campaign funded by the wealthy. She claimed that her father was her janitor when her brother insists he wasn't. She claimed for years on government forms that her race was American Indian. When a mother accused her of having sent her child to private schools, she insisted that her children went to public schools, but one of them actually did go to private school. And it's just stuff like that, just on and on, just needless. These are unforced errors. Why would you do this? In each and every case, she's trying to paint herself as one of the people, you know, just a normal person who's of Cherokee descent, or just a normal person who doesn't have fancy wine fundraisers, but actually does, because the money's good, I suppose. It's troubling, you know. We don't expect politicians to, tell the truth 100% of the time. You know, we know that politicians are going to color things here and there. Sure. This isn't that. This is Elizabeth Warren having a real problem with feeling secure in the reality that has been Elizabeth Warren's reality. It's not been good enough for her. She's had to, make herself a different demographic. She's had to, insist that her children went to schools that they didn't, and so on and so forth. It's just disturbing. Now, I don't know how that reflects on somebody who wants to be the president of the United States. You look at the current resident of the White House, and you know, he's quite a liar. It turned out that a lot of our presidents, once we elected them, we found out that they were embellishing the truth quite a bit. You know, is it an asset? Would it be an asset for a president to actually be an accomplished liar when it comes to who you are and what you're about? Who knows? Who knows? But my preference would be not to reward somebody for that. Absolutely not. We're going to come back to that. There's a lot more to say about this whole feud situation. And to the media's credit, not all of the media is going along with this. Not everyone is quite down with it. And I've got some clips here that I'm going to share in a second. that illustrate that point. But let's not leave this this issue with how bad CNN is as a honest arbiter of presidential debates. Let's not leave this just yet, because there's a lot more to say. One of the things that got pointed out on Twitter, and this is just crazy world here, is that the chyrons during the debate, the chyrons kept running just outrageous statements. Here's one. Warren supports a new trade deal with Mexico and Canada. Why is Sanders' opposition to it wrong? Then Sanders' proposal would double federal spending over a decade. Will he avoid bankrupting the country? That one's about Medicare for All. And here's another. Does Sanders owe voters an explanation of how much his health care plan will cost them and the country? Like, as if we haven't been talking about how much healthcare plans have been costing, as if that's not on his website. He's the only candidate. First of all, he's the only candidate who is doing Medicare for All, a true Medicare for All. And he's the only candidate who is doing Medicare for All and has explained where that money is coming from and how it works. They are hitting a candidate on, this is an example of hitting a candidate on their strength rather than hitting a candidate on their weakness, and obscuring the fact that there is all kinds of evidence to the contrary of what they're putting forth with regard to his Medicare for All plan. I think we learned something last night, though, about the party, and we already knew this, but I think we learned that this isn't just CNN. This isn't just, certain journalists like Wolf Blitzer or the reporter from the Des Moines Register. This isn't just certain reporters going after Bernie Sanders. I think that what we're experiencing here is a coordinated attack by the Democratic Party, and specifically by elites within the Democratic Party, you know, the funder class. They are terrified that Bernie Sanders could win this thing, especially with the polling. You know, Bernie Sanders is surging in California. We just saw the surge that we just talked about in Iowa. There was a poll that came out today that showed Bernie Sanders is the most electable in Florida in a matchup with Donald Trump. Bernie Sanders would win against Trump 53% to 47% if the election were held today, according to this poll. Over and over again, we're seeing Bernie Sanders just crushing it. He crushes it in fundraising. Last night, in 1 hour, Bernie Sanders raised $1 million, which was his best performance with fundraising during a debate so far. They were getting so many donations, by the way. They were getting 250 donations a minute. A minute. So he was crushing it. Now, at the same time, the Democrats are making things a lot more difficult for the party in general to win the fundraising race, because with impeachment happening right now, Donald Trump in the last 2 days has had some of his best fundraising since the so-called beginning of the election season, which for him never stopped after 2016. Remember when Donna Brazile got caught giving Hillary Clinton debate questions? Remember all that? And, it came out in the WikiLeaks documents, and Donna Brazile, who later became the interim chair of the DNC after Debbie Wasserman Schultz had to step down for being crooked. They put Donna Brazile, who is definitely not crooked, they wanted us to think. They put her in as interim chair, a person who gave debate questions to Hillary Clinton to try and give her an edge over Bernie Sanders. I think that what we saw last night is a twist on this, because this time CNN worked with a candidate, Elizabeth Warren, to take a debate question and give it to Bernie Sanders with this whole feud thing. You know, when that played out last night on television, and Bernie Sanders says, you know, no, I did not say that, yada, yada, yada. And they turn to Elizabeth Warren, and instead of saying, is that true? Instead of acknowledging that he had completely refuted what she had to say, they just turned to her and said, well, how did it make you feel when he said that to you? Which is essentially calling Bernie Sanders a liar on national television during the 7th Democratic presidential debate with a viewership of 7.3 million people. This is what CNN did. They called Bernie Sanders a liar. I don't think that's okay. I don't think it's okay for the way that this story was created. You know, there was four anonymous sources. These are staffers who work for Elizabeth Warren. None of them were in the meeting. And what they're saying is, Elizabeth Warren told me this. You know, well, at the same time, there was also a staffer whose identity was also protected. Another staffer who said that, well, Elizabeth embellishes things quite a bit, and, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt. So even within the staff, there are people who are disputing what happened. But CNN reported that as fact, and they didn't even say allegedly. In the story that ran, they didn't even say that this was an alleged statement by Bernie Sanders. Now, I don't know how litigious the Sanders campaign is feeling right now, but I would sure love to see a cease and desist, or, you know, some kind of legal action come out of that, because, you know, CNN left themselves wide open for it. That's the kind of thing that I would expect to see. Real quick, I want to talk a little bit about who did what, you know, who won, how this all kind of played out. We have from the New York Times opinion stable. The New York Times did this thing where they had all of their opinion writers rate all of the candidates with regard to their performance on the debate. And of course, Elizabeth Warren came out on top with 7.2 out of an average of 10 scores, an average 10 score. But what's interesting is that Bernie Sanders came out close second with 7.1. Now, the New York Times editorial staff, those are Elizabeth Warren's people. Oh my God. Talk about, you know, privileged Ivy League education. You know, they got all the power in the world. They're completely, you know, sheltered from the kinds of things that affect most of us out here in the world, like, you know, the possibility of being homeless because we might get a terrible disease and we can't pay for it, you know, because insurance doesn't pay for it. But anyway, the winners and losers of the debate, this is a cool piece that the New York Times editorial folks did, and I kind of followed along with them, and I have a few things to say. A lot of people have been saying that it was a great night for Joe Biden. I want to disagree. I don't think that Joe Biden had a great night. I think that he made it through, which is great. He made it through. But if I was an undecided voter, what Joe Biden was doing last night was he didn't present a vision. He didn't, even when he responded to the, when he responded to questions, he didn't respond with feeling. He didn't respond with any kind of emotion. He didn't seem like he believed what he was saying. And he also seemed a little bit afraid that he was getting ready to lose his train of thought. His performance did not instill confidence, is what I'm saying. Mayor Pete got a new buzz cut for the debate, and it was adorable. It was like his mom just sent him off, you know, to the student council, you know, elections, and got him a new little buzz cut and maybe a new pair of pants or whatever. He seemed to be in a whole different debate than everybody else. Mayor Pete seemed to be doing a high school debate competition or maybe model UN Security Council competition. He did not seem to be in any way, shape, or form engaging with the material and the people there on the stage. He had the set stuff that you could tell he had practiced in front of a mirror, and he just delivered those lines and felt good about it and went home. Amy Klobuchar started out the evening. I felt so bad for her. I mean, I really don't like Amy Klobuchar that much. I feel like somebody who is mean to their staff like that is, you know, they're already going to be on my bad side. But she started out the night right off the bat with the shakes, and she's had these shakes on and off throughout her debate performances, where her voice gets a little warbly and her bangs kind of vibrate, and you can tell that she's got a little anxiety. And that made me wonder if she doesn't suffer from an anxiety disorder, which, you know, that could explain why she's, you know, thrown office supplies at people and why she's been mean. I think that if there's an anxiety disorder, you know, lurking somewhere down there, you know, and, you know, hey, listen, I have anxiety. You know, I don't like flying on planes, and I don't like talking in front of big groups of people. So, you know, I feel it when I see it from her. Elizabeth Warren, you could tell she was waiting the whole time for that planted question to come to her about the feud with Bernie. It was just hanging in the air. It was just waiting. Steyer. Steyer was my favorite person of the night, because as soon as he came on, I knew that I could go to the kitchen and you know, refill my glass of water or do whatever it was. Steyer allowed me to run around and get some things done, so I was really glad that he was up there. I missed Tulsi Gabbard. I missed Andrew Yang. We needed those voices up there. I think that was a lot of the reason why we saw things be a lot more milk toast than they should have been. But I'm going to stop right there, and I'm going to bring in some callers, because I don't want to inundate you with so much stuff. There's just so much stuff here. Okay, first caller, and I'm just going to identify you guys by area code. First caller is at 321 area code. Hello, caller. You are with Brooke Hines on Progressive News Network Extra. Welcome.
Hey, Brooke, longtime listener. Great show tonight.
Thank you. So what did you think of the debate? Did you have like any kind of heartfelt response to what you were saying?
Yeah, I kind of went, I kind of had two reactions. You know, one is, as you pointed out, the whole Warren Bernie, he said, she said thing was, you know, transparently awful and disingenuous. And my background's in journalism, and CNN just threw all the rules out the window. There's a good article up on Rolling Stone by Matt Taibbi right now, kind of spelling it all out. And, you know, from their sourcing, where they, you know, they claimed to have four people, but it was two people that had talked to someone and two other people that were familiar with the talking. And they used all the language of just facts. You know, there was no allegation. There was just, this happened. Let's react to it. And it was so coordinated with CNN hosting the debate. This was on the bad side, the final morphing of American journalism into infotainment. CNN and the Warren campaign colluded to create this fake loaded story, obviously, you know, traversing, you know, gender tensions and 2016's claims about Bernie Bros and misogyny in the ranks of the Sanders people, and raised all that stuff up, dredged it all up, and, you know, dropped it like David Axelrod called it a grenade. They were giddy backstage in the spin room at CNN. You know, you pointed out their cavalcade of awful chirons. You know, will Sanders explain why Medicare for All won't bankrupt the country? No mention of the 500,000 Americans that go bankrupt right now without Medicare for All. So it was just tragic and despicable. And as a progressive voter, I liked Warren probably second best to Bernie in the field. You know, she did some good work with Dodd-Frank and creating the CFPB. She wrote a cool book called The Two-Income Trap, you know, years ago, that kind of explained the economic pressures that middle-class Americans have faced over the years. There's a lot of things I like about her, and to have her be, you know, sort of the instrument of that, you know, deliberate, malicious, disingenuous attack, and the glee that particularly the CNN commentators had in the spin room afterwards about, oh my gosh, they had Jess McIntosh on, a former Clinton comms person, you know, arguing with Anderson Cooper that it wasn't a he said, she said story. It was reported out, which, again, coming from journalism, that's not four anonymous sources that really all boil down to whatever Elizabeth said, you know, is not a reported out story or whatever that's supposed to mean. It was just a train wreck on their part.
I thought that was interesting that the in that spin room and in that particular moment that they were using the fact that, oh, the story had been reported out
by us.
by you, as if that makes it anything. That just makes it another it's really, you're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more. You know, I kept having this feeling, and I think we're going to be seeing some more of this as the week goes on, that there was I think there's starting to be this narrative created that Elizabeth Warren has her truth. And
Amber Tamblyn just tweeted that out.
Oh, really? Oh, really?
Yeah,
so it's
just,
her truth.
Went for it, yeah. It's her truth.
Her
it may
truth,
not be the truth
versus the truth. Yeah. And this is one of the things that killed me about when Blasey Ford was during the Kavanaugh hearings. You kept hearing Kamala Harris and other senators in that committee saying, well, she's telling her truth. And to me, I feel like what Blasey Ford was doing was she was telling the truth. That was the
right.
truth. And if it's not the truth, then there's no reason to talk about it. If it's like just whoever's truth, then, you know, save that for the campfire.
And appropriating the language of the, you know, the very important Me Too movement and, you know, women all over the world speaking up about misogyny and abuse and the way they've been, you know, held back and beaten down. Appropriating that for a cheap political move like this is just stomach churning, you know. And I think people maybe on the Sanders side tried not to react, but it's hard because it's just such a gut punch to see something that ugly, you know, and that calculated, and just to see the way these propagandists work, bootstrapping themselves with, well, it's been reported in the news, you know. That's like a Dick Cheney going on and talking about the, you know, the New York Times reporting for the Iraq War when he was the source for all the stories he was citing. It's awful. On the upside, though, I just want to say this. I know you have other callers, so I'll leave you alone. But on the upside, I don't think people are buying it. I was all over social media today and reading the news. And, you know, Taibbi's come out with this thing in Rolling Stone. Aaron Burnett on CNN pushed back a little bit on this idea. Anderson Cooper pushed back. A lot of people are kind of recoiling from this obviousness, and you can kind of see who was on the side of it and who wasn't, you know, the Hillary people and the to a lesser extent, the Obama people and Van Jones are just giggling themselves silly over this whole thing. And I think a lot of people aren't buying it. And that's, you know, the double-edged sword of this massive instant communication we have now is, yeah, a lot of people can say a lot of things, but then the world gets a chance to react and people get to see, you know, more than the people on TV speaking their truth or the truth, whichever one we're looking for. And I was kind of buoyed by that. And I also saw that, you know, Sanders had a record-breaking fundraising night, whereas, you know, poor Warren had apparently people asking for their money back from Act Blue. So it is what it is, the world we live in now. But it's both sort of gut-wrenching, and I think there's cause for some optimism. I don't think they hurt Sanders with this. I think the only people that thought that was fantastic were the people that are in love with that Bernie bro, you know, line of attack, which has pretty much fallen on its face. He handled himself beautifully. He didn't argue with her. He didn't get angry, which I think was – that would have been a home run for them, you know, is to get him to sputter or be mean. Yeah. And he just doesn't have it in him. He's just not that guy. And it kind of is a self-defeating argument to say that, you know, he hates women or has contempt for them when he's standing right there being fibbed on going, you know, that's not true, but I'm not going to get too wound up about it.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And thank you for the call, 321.
My pleasure. Keep up the good work.
Thanks. Call in again too. I needed to hear that. I needed to hear that, that someone felt like this wasn't sticking and that it's, you know, not as ugly as I felt it was. Okay. I had a 404 caller 404. Hi, are you there?
404.
Hey there.
Yeah,
what's
doing?
Up? How did you watch the debate and what did you think?
Just watched pieces of it. look, the situation you're talking about now, I mean, that's been going on since day one. So, I mean, this is not anything new. It was just they did it so raggedy that everybody could kind of see it. Like, this wasn't something that progressives only are seeing and then everyone else making them feel like they're paranoid. The reality of it is, centrist and similar to the right wing, we might as well say, liberals and Democrats do not want a progressive or leftist candidate. They will fight a leftist harder than they'll fight 45. And when you start talking about the donor class, you know, who's going to be cutting the big checks, and the last thing they want to see is actual reform when it comes to this society, especially economically. Of course these people are going to, you know, put every bullet in the gun they can to take out anyone who was talking about anything that's progressive. And as we've seen Elizabeth Warren move towards the middle, she starts to get accepted by, you know, the old guard. And they cooked this up for her the other night. But think about how flimsy this is. You guys already talked about how bad it was journalistically. But just think about this. It's not even a good smear. Let's say Bernie did say it. That's not an indictment of Bernie. That would be an indictment of the electorate saying our people are not advanced enough to vote in a woman. That's what that would be saying about the American population. You see what I'm saying?
That's a good point.
Their smear is not even good when you really think about it. But overall, just watching this clown show, and I don't really know how much value these things really have anymore since television is not the dominant medium anymore. And these things, you know, they come off like scripted reality shows as far as how the questions are laid out, who got the zinger in, who got the crowd to react to it. And then we get the so-called experts who worked for different candidates and different parties for all these different years to come on and give their Monday morning football commentary about it. So it's like we're almost in 2020. So it's like if you don't have certain values and certain integrity and certain things you believe in that candidates kind of have to kind of, you know what I mean, at least give you the minimum ability of support for, I don't understand this idea that we have to pick, you know, amongst the worst of what we have. So, I mean, this is clearly a not an old guard election. You're going against somebody who may not even show up to debate, if we're being honest about it. Who knows if 45 just says, no, I'm not going to do it. Like, we are in uncharted territory, and we got people up here trying to run this old 90s playbook in an economy that's nowhere near what it was, in a society that is different. So it's like if you're not talking about climate change, if you're not talking about action toward race and diversity and you know, access to health, actual health care, not access to health care, actual, like if you're not talking about those things in a real way and saying that you're going to go fight against the, you know, that donor class I was talking about, because that's what it comes down to, then how do people think they're going to energize an electorate to come out and vote for them? So, yeah, and if they prop old Wooden Biden up, I mean, then we can expect four more years of this nonsense, of this babbling, lying person we see on TV every day. So,
Well, and didn't we just see that that Barack Obama said that he would step in and try to stop Bernie Sanders if he was gaining traction? Wasn't that...
Yeah, a centrist to his heart.
Mm-hmm.
A centrist to his heart. And that would actually reflect the values and ideals of one Barack Obama. So that wasn't surprising to me either. That kind of goes with who he is. But think about it. Elizabeth Warren was a Republican 30 years ago. Now the Democratic Party has moved so far to the right that I think she feels comfortable in. This Clinton-esque party. So, you know, this is
One of my favorite tweets last night. God, I can't remember who did it. It might have been. Okay, I'm not going to say who I think it is because I'm going to misattribute it. But remember when Elizabeth Warren said that she was the only one on the stage who had defeated a Republican in the last 30 years, and Bernie Sanders said, "Well, I defeated a Republican." You know, in 1990, which is within 30 years, someone pointed out online that he defeated a Republican to get into Congress while Elizabeth Warren was still a Republican. And she tried to, you know, make it like he doesn't know what he's talking about and blah blah blah. And I wish that Bernie Sanders had the presence of mind. I really think he was put back on his heels. I wish he had had the presence of mind to say, I defeated a Republican while you were still a Republican. Because she had that coming.
He was trying not to stay red and get angry, so he was being careful, but I mean, that's just one of those, like, ESPN stats and info where they're like, this is the first player to ever record an assist and a steal at the same time in the first quarter of 12 minutes during the start of the game. Like, it's a true stat, but it doesn't actually mean anything. So you run in Massachusetts. This dude was running as a socialist in America way back then and winning. Like, that's a much bigger accomplishment, much more difficult climb to make than anything Warren's done.
Right. It's just getting more interesting. So Bernie Sanders has a history of doing well in caucuses, and he almost won the Iowa caucus in 2016, missing it by 0.1% or 0.2%. It was so close at the end, and there were a few coin tosses that determined some of the precincts reporting. So, or counties, I forget how they do it in Iowa. So he has a really good chance right now in Iowa. If he takes Iowa, and it looks like he's going to run away with California, which has more delegates than the first four states put together, South Carolina, Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada. His polling looks really good in New Hampshire. His polling has been at the top two in Nevada, kind of going back and forth with Biden now. We'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. And I still feel like I shouldn't do this because every time I make predictions, they go wrong. Although I was totally right about Hillary Clinton losing. I think that South Carolina is more up in the air than people are talking about. We're not seeing a lot of polling out of there. We're not, I think we're going a lot on conventional wisdom, and, you know, something, it might defy our expectations. You know, we just have to see. We just have to wait and see.
Right, but it also acts as a buffer, so you can kind of push out what you consider, if you're the old guard, you push out what you consider the fringe element by saying, hey, you know, this is coming up. There's no way your guy's going to be able to pass this. So old Joe's going to be able to coast through there, and things will be as they normally should. You know what I mean? So it's kind of a veiled threat the way that they lay it out. But honestly, mm-hmm. if you're on the ground and Joe actually has to get on a microphone, who knows how bad it can go? Like this idea that, you know, they can kind of put their finger on the scale and then tell us things are even. It's like, nah, man, we need to see this play out. We just went through this a few years ago. How about you centrists move over to the left a little bit? Because it appears that's where the young people and the energy is. So I think we got a bigger domino.
I think you've got a really good point right there. And I think that if the party is really going to be about unity, then that unity has to be both ways. They need to stop attacking Bernie Sanders as if he's some sort of space alien, you know. They're right now they're not doing the party any good. Listen, thanks for calling in 404. I really enjoy talking to you, and we'll see you soon. See you again real soon.
All right, have a good one. Thanks.
You too. Thanks. Okay, so wow, you know, I think that 321 caller had some really important things to say about it's not as bad as I think. 404 caller is making some really good points about, you know, where the party is with regard to centrism and how that is not matching up with what's really happening out on the ground. And just to back that up, I wanted to throw some stats down. Let's see. Well, just for the hell of it, speaking time last night, Warren had the most speaking time at 18 minutes, 52 seconds. Bernie came in at second with 17 minutes and 41 seconds. And I think what's really interesting is that between Bernie, there's Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg before you get to Biden. So Biden is the second to the last. Like, he had almost the least amount of time next to Steyer. And it's not surprising, because when he started answering questions, he did that thing where he stopped talking. And, you know, I was like, can I be done now? You know, he was afraid that he was going to mess something up. We see that a lot from Biden, and it always seems to me like he's worried that he's going to be weak on this. Now, my very favorite moment for Bernie in the whole night came very early on. And I thought that this moment was stellar. As somebody who comes from a peace background and, kind of comes from the same community that Bernie Sanders has been, from for so many years. So this whole debate, the whole first part of it was framed up around foreign policy, and basically CNN wanted everyone to go and talk about how they were going to start a war, how many wars they would have, how much they would spend on the wars, and who would be the first to lob a bomb at somebody else. I mean, it was really remarkable how CNN was framing this whole first part of the debate. It's understandable that foreign policy would be featured, given that Donald Trump seems to want to be getting us into a war with Iran. And it seems like CNN is right there with them, trying to see if they can get any of the candidates to go along with Donald Trump. So check out, this is my very favorite clip of Bernie Sanders of the night. Came early,
yeah,
here it is.
I'll tell you, but before I tell you that, let me tell you something else. And that is, I don't know if my colleagues here will agree with me or not, maybe they will. But what we have to face as a nation is that the two great foreign policy disasters of our lifetimes, the war in Vietnam and the war in Iraq, both of those wars were based on lies. And right now, what I fear very much is we have a president who is lying again and could drag us into a war that is even worse than the war in Iraq.
Now, I want you to understand what was going on right there. Usually when you hear a candidate break out of the mold of what's being said, that candidate is doing it to pander. You saw Elizabeth Warren do that in her closing statement, where she said, oh, here's all the things that we didn't talk about, which were actually just like identities that she was pandering to, like people with disabilities and the trans community and this, that, and the other, all these things were, that was pandering. What Bernie Sanders is doing here is taking a question and reframing it and telling a great truth, the way that real leaders do, the way that people who really care about the way that things are going on, the way that statesmen care about things. And he continues.
I'm gonna tell you, but before I tell you that, let me tell you something else.
I'm gonna fast forward that. All right.
But the two great foreign policy disasters of our lifetimes, the war in Vietnam and the war in Iraq, both of those wars were based on lies. And right now, what I fear very much is we have a president who is lying again and could drag us into a war that is even worse than the war in Iraq. To answer your question, what we need to do is have an international coalition. We cannot keep acting unilaterally. As you know, the nuclear deal with Iran was worked on with a number of our allies. We have got to undo what Trump did, bring that coalition together, and make sure that Iran never gets a nuclear weapon. Vice President Biden.
Okay, so what's going on there? I mean, they didn't get into the Iran deal. They didn't get into how this all broke down. But what happened was, sanctions, we had the nuclear deal with Iran in exchange for the sanctions. So they agreed to do this. We lift the sanctions. And then all of a sudden, because Saudi Arabia and Israel want to use the United States as their personal war machine, they said, we want you to do this. Let's put the sanctions back on. Let's put the clamps on them, and so on and so forth, which is ramping up those tensions and leading to escalation and possibly conflict with Iran. And in order to pull that back, I mean, this is kind of boring stuff. In order to pull that back, you have to use diplomacy. You have to use the international community. You have to use, oh my God, the United Nations would might maybe figure in here somewhere. Who knows? But the point is the nuclear deterrence to make sure that Iran doesn't, you know, create nuclear weapons, you know. First of all, a really good way to make sure that a country doesn't create nuclear weapons that they would use against us is to not create the conditions in which they would want to use a nuclear weapon against us. You know, that requires diplomacy. This isn't about being surrender monkeys. This isn't about like going and saying, oh, please, Iran, you know, like be nice to us. No, it's about diplomacy. It's about getting out there and, you know, having your diplomats, you know, your Secretary of State creating policy that everyone can live with. Now, the JCPOA, the agreement that was in place before was working. It was working. And, you know, President Dumbass has, you know, nuked that. I mean, let's talk about, you know, nuclear arms. He totally nuked that, you know. And in the night that all of that went down, by the way, you know, I'm way older than I think most of the people that I talk to and on social media, and the degree to which people were worried about a conflict happening super fast and a conflict escalating to a nuclear conflict kind of blew my mind. And it reminded me of when I was younger and that's exactly where I would have been, you know. And I think it's something about, you know, just being a certain age and you've seen the country go through this a couple of different times. I felt like I knew it wasn't going to, we weren't going to, you know, be lobbing bombs, especially like nuclear warheads all of a sudden. But I was in the minority. Everybody else was expecting that. And you know what? That's reasonable. They were being reasonable. The only reason why I was holding back is because I'm just apparently old and just, you know, emotionally worn out with the whole thing. Bernie Sanders was the only person on that debate stage who met what CNN was putting forward. And what CNN, let's not make a mistake, what CNN was saying was, which one of you guys is going to start the war first? Which one of you guys can we count on to, you know, put the hammer to Iran? That is not the way that you work foreign policy in the international community. That is not the way that you do diplomacy. And, you know, everyone might be forgiven that they don't understand what diplomacy is, because it really hasn't been something that we've talked about since the freaking Carter years. And if you want to get right down to it, the entire first part of the debate was just a disgrace. It was just one question after another, and CNN was trying to get people to trying to get the candidates to commit to being each one being more belligerent than the last one. You know, and I think that Joe Biden expected for that moment of the debate to be his best moment. And so he kept falling back on this. Well, I was the one who was charged with stopping the war. Now, don't forget that everybody knew for days that Bernie Sanders was going to hit Joe Biden on his Iraq war vote and hit Joe Biden on his continued support for the Iraq war. David Sirota had been writing about this and teasing it and promoting it for days. He had also been teasing and promoting for days Joe Biden's work on cutting Social Security, raising the age of eligibility for Social Security, and then adding Medicare into that at some point. All of these very important issues had been teased for days. And so party elites knew that they had to do something to counter these attacks that they don't have an answer to. There is not a good answer to why Joe Biden worked with the Cat Food Commission, the Grand Bargain Commission, to try and raise the eligibility age and try to, you know, push people off Social Security. He doesn't have a good answer for that. He doesn't have a good answer for why he voted for the Iraq War and supported the Iraq War and even said that he would pin, what was it, that he would nominate George W. Bush for the Nobel Peace Prize if he got in and got out of Iraq like lickety-split. I mean, this is nutso stuff. But if you remember, back then, everybody had lost their minds. I thought that we would have found them by now. Such as, we should be so lucky. If anybody sees my mind, by the way, you can mail it back to me. I'll send you a self-addressed stamped envelope. I want to return to this winners and losers of the Democratic debate from the New York Times opinion, folks, because, oh my God, it's just so precious. So they go through and, you know, some of the folks on here are more snarkier than others. You can always depend on Maureen Dowd, you know, to bring the heat and stuff. So she had a couple of really good things to say. Ross Doha had some funny things to say. So let's just kind of go through this real quick. Like I said, Elizabeth Warren, 7.2 out of 10. And no surprise, Michelle Goldberg gave Elizabeth Warren a 9 out of 10. And she said, she just is like, it was one of her best debates. Now, you know, Michelle Goldberg's husband is a Blue State Digital, which handles all of Elizabeth Warren's stuff. So, you know, take that for what it is. Michelle Goldberg, who is basically... her family is part of the campaign. And she gave Elizabeth Warren a 9 out of 10 and says, one of her best debates. She had the most memorable line of the night. Quote, the only people on this stage who have won every single election they have been in are women. You know what? Maybe I should run for something, because apparently if you're a woman and you run for something, you won't ever lose. Hillary Clinton, what happened? Okay. I like the people who, for Elizabeth Warren, kind of panned her performance, like Maureen Dowd. Maureen Dowd gave her a 4 out of 10. And Maureen Dowd says of Elizabeth Warren, she says, her slide continues. Sanders has gotten back the progressive high ground on healthcare and soaking the rich, even after the Warren forces tried to submarine him this week. I love that line. They tried to submarine him this week. She goes on, she didn't want to push it too hard, and that let him off the hook. And in the margin, I said, WTF, she didn't want to push it too hard. She pushed it pretty dang hard there, Maureen. When we get to Bernie Sanders, Maureen Dowd gives Bernie Sanders an 8 out of 10, which is pretty good. And she says, waving his arms with the flair of a maestro, Sanders dominated the stage, didn't give any ground on his giveaway programs, and stared down Warren over her claim that he had told her that a woman couldn't win. He said he totally believes a woman could win. He obviously doesn't want to. He obviously doesn't want a woman to win this year. Good point. Good point, Maureen Dowd. George Castaneda gave him an 8.5 out of 10 and said that Sanders gave his best performance yet. He's authentic, eloquent, and on message. But will Americans elect a socialist? Melanie Price gave him a 9 out of 10. He said Sanders looked like the nominee. His supporters should be ecstatic. Russ Doha, of all people, said the Biden-Bernie debates after Super Tuesday will be deliciously grumpy. What I thought was interesting about this is that He just assumes this is Bernie Biden and isn't paying attention to anyone else, which I think is probably the right way to look at this. Further on in this piece, some other funny things that were said. When you get down to Joe Biden, again, the Times opinion board here did not care for him too much. 6.2 out of a 10. So, you know, for those of us who are giving grades, that's a D. That's a D. That's a low D. Gail Collins gave him a 5 out of 10, and she said, he didn't screw up. But I can't really celebrate the fact that he seemed functional but flat. Fair to mention the many things he did in previous administrations, but you need a new thought to grab onto here and there. Ross again says a very Biden performance. He rambled, evaded, and courted disaster in multiple answers, but somehow always stumbled through. Nobody really attacked him. Nothing happened to hurt his lead. You know, I mean, people are basically happy that Joe Biden doesn't drool on himself and, you know, load his pants up with poo. I mean, like the bar is set so low for Joe Biden. Nicole Hemmer says, Biden debated like a candidate whose biggest goal was not to say anything dumb. And parenthetically, she says, he gets an extra point for succeeding. Daniel McCarthy says, stumbles haven't hurt him before. He's almost Trump-like in his resilience. He's not getting sharper, though. Hector Tobar says, ugh, he's a shadow of the man who we knew just 4 or 8 years ago. At one of the most pointed moments of the debate, he seemed to disappear. Moving on to Pete Buttigieg, who is rated below Joe Biden. I thought that this was funny what Maureen Dowd said. She gave him a 4 out of 10. He said, he still seems canned and came across as the star of the high school debate team. He's straining to come up with the vision thing. So I like what she said because it's exactly what I said. He just seemed like he was doing a high school debate. And when she says the vision thing, that's a call out to Poppy Bush, to H.W. Bush. He used to talk about the vision thing, and people would say that he had he didn't have a vision, which he didn't. This is a crack on Buttigieg that I completely agree with. He sounds over rehearsed. Nice try answering the question about his lack of Black support, but the numbers speak louder. That's from Mimi Schwartz, who gave him a 6 out of 10. Of course, Buttigieg had that problem with making up Black supporters in South Carolina. Nobody's ever called him out for that, which I think is remarkable, absolutely remarkable. Okay, so today, great articles on the debate from Dave Lindorf of Truth Dig, Jessica Corbett of Truth Dig, who also writes for Common Dreams. I have mentioned also the Ryan Grimm, Ada Chavez, and Akella Lacey piece from The Intercept. All of these are good. I think my favorite still is Zach Carter's Huffington Post piece. I want to make sure that I did this. We got to make sure that we hit this these few points that he made in here. Because, oh my God, he really nailed some stuff. Zach Carter zeroes in on this thing that CNN put forth about government not being able to do anything. And this is super important. And, you know, like, let's maybe land on this particular point. So in the piece, let's start here. if you recall, CNN asked Bernie Sanders, like, what is he going to do about all of these insurance workers who are going to be out of a job? Because, oh my God, don't you owe them anything? You know, every time somebody asks that, I think, why didn't anybody ever ask this question when NAFTA was passed? I mean, we decimated our entire manufacturing base and nobody gave a shit. You know, like where I used to live in East Tennessee, that was just full of really cool manufacturing jobs. People made everything you can imagine there. And there's not any of it left. Nobody cared about what to do about those people. Oh, but now they all are addicted to opioids now. So they're all just like garbage people. So we don't have to care. You know, that's really crappy. And nobody asked that question back then. You know, Bill Clinton, Al Gore, that whole crew, they got a complete free pass on that. And I don't think that we should be able to talk about the opioid crisis without talking about NAFTA in the same breath, because that is what is going on right now in rural America, and especially in Appalachia. But anyway, I digress. So Sanders was asked about what to do with the health insurance industry. To which Sanders replies, well, the health insurance industry is ripping off the country. That is a good answer. So what are you going to do with all these health insurance people? Well, they're ripping off the country. They're going to have to live with it. But they will be eligible for money from a transition fund offered for up to 5 years of income, health care, and job training for people who work for health insurance companies. Now, I used to tangentially work for health insurance companies. The early part of my marketing career, I did advertising for HCA, Hospital Corporation of America. I mean, like the most evil people in the freaking world. I didn't know that they were the most evil people in the world until I started working with them. They were terrible. Anyway, when I was doing advertising for hospital groups for handling like $9 million, you know, budgets for broadcast advertising and, you know, shooting television ads and stuff, I didn't have health insurance. Now, I was in a small advertising agency and I didn't have health insurance. And I was handling these major budgets that were marketing, you know, trauma centers and Wings Air Rescue, these helicopter programs, and, you know, like all of these doctors groups. And I couldn't see a doctor. You know, here's Bernie Sanders saying that people who are displaced within the health insurance company, they will be taken care of. There will be a transition fund. But he is keen to say that it's the industry itself, you know, it's the system. The health insurance industry itself is ripping off the country. So that system needs to go away. We will take care of the people, unlike the way we treated our manufacturing base, you know, and unlike the way that we've been treating people just generally up until now. They will be taken care of. So, you know, it's really kind of gross to, you know, for them to bring that up about, you know, oh, well, you're just going to create all of these unemployed people. Well, guess what? Bernie Sanders is one of the very few people who is going to do well with that. Zach Carter continues. He says, it was a reasonable response to a ridiculous question. No matter what the next president does about the American healthcare system, health insurers and healthcare providers are going to make less money. That's the point. You know, they're making way too much money now. They're going to have to make less. They're going to have to make do with one yacht instead of three, perhaps. The healthcare crisis in America is the product of health insurance companies and healthcare providers ripping everybody off. You can't fix that without sticking it to them. You know, and this is the difference, by the way, between a liberal and a progressive, you know, in case you're wondering. A progressive is not, doesn't have a problem with using a stick. a liberal always wants to use a carrot, you know, and say that, oh, they'll do the right thing if we give them enough money and we make it attractive enough for them. And a progressive says, you know what, there are rules and we get to make the rules. And if you're doing something against the rules, then sorry, stop doing it. It's against the rules. So right now, health insurance companies are making too much money. It's going to be against the rules and they're going to have to stop doing it. I mean, end of story. I mean, grow the hell up. Okay, moving on. Yet tonight, nothing could stop Philip from invoking something a random billionaire probably cares a lot about. He said, quote, Senator Sanders, your campaign proposals would double federal spending over the next decade, an unprecedented level of spending not seen since World War II. How would you keep your plans from bankrupting the country? And that was one of the chyrons. Which I mentioned, which Zach Carter mentioned. Sanders' position isn't a secret. He's going to eliminate premiums and copays and replace that with tax revenue. Either you believe he's going to be able to bring down healthcare costs by bridging government to bear them process, or you don't. You know, this is the way every other country on earth does it. This is the way that we need to do it. Otherwise, we're just going to continue the way we're going. And you know, right now my family pays $20,000 a year for health care, just for health insurance. That's not even health care. That's health insurance. That's our premium. That's not even our premium that includes what our employer adds to it. That's just what we pay. You know, so on top of that, we have co-pays. And if you want to get imaging done, there's a $2,000 deductible, you know, so on and so forth, stuff like that. Sanders, to his credit, just stood up and he said, our plan wouldn't bankrupt the country. And then he says, the festival of inanity ground on. Senator Warren, Wolf Blitzer asked, why does it make sense for the government to manufacture drugs, especially when public trust in government is near historic lows? Well, this isn't what Elizabeth Warren has proposed, and she said so, and yada, yada, yada. There's compulsory licensing, and other countries do it. This is not a big deal. Blitzer's query, however, didn't just misconstrue Warren's drug plan, and I think you all see where this is getting ready to go. It called into question the government action on any catastrophic problem facing the country and the world, from climate change to healthcare, to wages and inequality. Given public mistrust of government, why bother doing anything? You know, and that's the kind of thing that, you know, that's Koch brothers. That's Koch brothers. Messaging right there. That's these guys all attending the same cocktail parties. And what worries the Koch brothers definitely worries Wolf Blitzer. But, you know, I'll tell you what, here at Progressive News Network, we don't give a half a hoot what the Koch brothers want. We don't give a half a hoot about what the billionaires want. We know we're on separate teams. We know, you know, who our friends are and who our friends aren't. And I think that you do too. We're your friends and I want you to be our friends. So keep reading good stuff. Keep reading Truth Dig. Keep reading The Intercept. Keep listening to Progressive News Network. This was Progressive News Network Extra. We do Progressive News Network every Sunday at 7 p.m. live. I'm always the first person, first half hour, and we go for 2 hours until 9. That's just the way it is. And we'll do another one this week. If nothing happens within the next day or so, then I'll see you on Sunday. But if something happens, well, I'll bust in and do another extra. And thank you so much for tuning in, and we will see you real soon.